When she was 18, her father gave her the advice she needed to follow her dreams and become a writer. The next day, he had a heart attack and died in her arms. She did become a writer and a business owner and then a wife and mother. Today, after 13 books, a million of them in print, she's an award-winning syndicated columnist, a radio and TV host, and the owner of two successful companies. And now, Elise is here to help you rebuild your life. Stay tuned. This is gonna be good. This is the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB. I want to wish a happy Father's Day to all the dads, uncles, brothers, cousins, sons who listen to this show every week. I hope you get a lot out of it. I know I do, and it's nice to have you around. So I hope it's a great rest of the day, and thank you for sharing with us. 404-872-0750. You can always find me online at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. That's the Twitter feed, or thinkglink.com. So my guest this morning, or for I should say the first of two really interesting people, is a guy named Gary Zimmerman. And Gary was sitting in his office in Japan where he was running a mutual fund and thinking to himself he needed to move some cash around back in the States. And this was a number of years ago, and it was near the financial crisis, and it wasn't as easy as it sounds. You know, here if you want to cross the street and get a quarter of a point of interest on your savings, you can do that. Not so easy when you live abroad. And so out of this came a really interesting website that I thought he should tell you about. And in the interest of full disclosure, I should tell you I met Gary because he asked our company to do some social media for him, which is how I met him. But his story is so interesting that I thought you should hear from him yourselves. So, Gary Zimmerman, welcome to the Elise Glink Show.
Thank you very much, Elise. It's nice to be here.
It's nice to have you. So I've given you kind of this tee-up that you were sitting in Japan trying to figure out how to move money around, but there's so much more to that story. The website is called MaxMyInterest.com. So why don't we start there? What is Max all about?
Sure. Well, Max is a new online service that helps investors automatically maximize the interest they earn on their cash. I think many of us have been frustrated by how low interest rates have been for so long, and we thought it was time to finally bring a little bit of transparency and automation to cash really as an asset class. And many people don't think of it that way, but many people are sitting on larger balances of cash because they've made a very purposeful decision to keep it as cash.
So you've got cash in this account, it's sitting there. I've got savings. Everybody's got savings who listens to this show because, you know, I think that's so important. And trying to maximize it when the banks pay virtually nothing. I mean, I think you might be even losing money just with what a regular bank would pay. What your innovation was to basically go to online banks, right?
That's right. And online banks have been around for about a decade, but only a small subset of the population either knows about them or has used them. What was interesting to me about online banks is that they have a fundamentally different business model. And that business model doesn't require them to have brick-and-mortar branches, and as a result, their operating costs are dramatically lower than those of a traditional brick-and-mortar bank. And what they've been able to do is pass on a portion of those savings to depositors in the form of higher rates.
So we, on the show, we've talked often about ING Direct, which was an online bank. Discover has an online bank called Discover Bank. These are the kinds of banks you're talking about, right?
Yeah, that's right. ING Direct was one of the leading online banks. They were acquired by Capital One, which many people think of as a credit card company, and that was renamed Capital One 360. And they're one of the banks that we've included in our network, as well as several other leading brands in financial services today. So Barclays, American Express, GE Capital, and Ally Bank are also in our system.
These are all FDIC-insured banks, and that's really part of what you're doing here is you're helping people who would need to think about FDIC limits, right, of $250,000 per account so that it would have the full range of insurance possible. You're helping them maximize and increase the safety of their cash as well, right?
That's right, and different people are using our system for different purposes. Some of our members, we call our customers members, some of our members have many multiples of the FDIC insurance limit in cash, and what they're looking for primarily is a system to help them manage cash across multiple banks so that they can help ensure that all of that cash stays safe. Other members are interested in earning as much as possible on their cash, and so they're interested in the fact that our system presents a dynamic cash reallocation model so that as interest rates change, our system helps those funds flow from bank accounts with lower rates to bank accounts with higher rates. And some of our members like both of those features, and we think that that delivers a lot of value for them.
So you're sitting in your apartment in Japan, and you've just sold a place in the United States. You've got some cash, and you're living abroad, so you can't buy another house with it. And what happened after you were sort of in that situation, trying to move money around physically and finding it was just really difficult? When did you get this idea for MaxMyInterest.com?
Well, I think we all remember the financial crisis, perhaps all too painfully. and I hit this moment, this revelation that all of my cash that was above the FDIC limit at my bank was now exposed. And that if the bank didn't survive, all of that cash would disappear. And I think the reason most of us hold on to cash is because we want it to be that safe asset class, that safe haven. So it's the last thing that we want to have at risk. And so, as you mentioned, I couldn't walk around the corner and open up new bank accounts at brick and mortar branches because I was living 7,000 miles away. And so I went online and I studied the online banks and FDIC insurance and got comfortable. And then spent the day opening actually a very large number of these online accounts. They only take about 10 or 15 minutes to open each, but I opened many of them. So that was how it started. But then as time passed, I noticed that the interest rates at these banks were changing. And at the time, it was a declining interest rate environment, so one bank would cut its rate and then another would cut its rate further. And my view was that all of these online bank accounts, since they were FDIC insured, were offering something very similar. And I thought that my money ought to be placed in the accounts that were offering the highest interest rate. Seems simple enough.
Yeah, well, I would want my money to earn more for me. We talk on the show a lot about making your money work as hard as it can for you because you're already out there working as hard as you can to earn it to begin
That's right.
with. So just sitting around letting it languish doesn't seem to be the smartest thing in the book.
That's right. So I started a very manual process of monitoring interest rates, and I wasn't perfectly disciplined about it. We're all busy, and we all have other things to do. But from time to time, I would log into these accounts and check the rates and transfer the funds from one of my accounts to another one of my accounts. And I did this for about 3.5 years before I finally got tired of doing it. But I couldn't stop doing it because I knew that this opportunity to earn more on that cash existed. And so I sat down to see whether it might be possible to automate this whole process so that the cash could continue working hard for me without me having to spend my Sundays.
Yeah, well, which Sundays for you in Japan would, of course, be Monday morning for the United States. As we know, during the financial crisis, I would start many a show on Sunday morning saying, well, guess what happened? You know, what's happened between the time that the U.S. stock market closed and before Asia opens? And here we are. All right, so you came up with this idea. You've built the technology using a Chicago-based company. I know that you've partnered with them, which is how we got introduced. And now you've got this whole thing kind of working in the background, right? The technology just sort of works for you, and it automatically moves the money around between these accounts you've already set up. And then if you need money, what happens? How does it get to your checking account?
Well, the way that online banks work is that when you set them up, you link them to your checking account, and that's done via a secure link using what they call trial deposits. It's through a network called ACH, which some people call eCheck, and it's basically an electronic linkage between your online account and your checking account. And all of the transfers that occur through Max occur along those linkages, so they're highly secure. The way that Max works is when it finds that money needs to move from one place to another, it simply asks your banks on your behalf to move funds from one of your accounts to another account. And with Max, you initially tell the system how much you'd like to keep in checking, and as Max does its monthly optimization calculations, it makes sure that that amount of money is left in checking. So if you've dipped below your desired target balance, it will pull funds from savings back to your checking account to top it up. If you find yourself with more in checking than you intended to have, it will sweep it away to the higher yielding savings accounts.
So it's just kind of working in the background, making your money work harder for you.
That's exactly right. And so Max involves a one-time setup, and then after that it really runs automatically. And often I'll call our members just to ask them, how they're doing and how they're enjoying Max. And often what I'll hear is Gary, I haven't thought about it in months, which is exactly what I like to hear, because the whole point is that we all have better things to do with our time. And so you can set this up once and then it's sort of set it and forget it.
So what's nice about this is when you look at the banks, when they raise their interest rates, which I know you think, because we had this conversation offline, you think is going to happen, that interest rates are going to go up. And we've been hearing sort of the same thing from economists all year, although it hasn't happened yet. You think that these interest rates are going to rise. And then inside Max, the interest rates in all the accounts sort of rise or fall, whatever the bank is going to do, and you automatically move the money around to maximize it. So if interest rates go up, you automatically get that in for all of your cash, right?
That's right. And in fact, the online banks that we've spoken to agree with our view that the interest rates at online banks will likely rise faster than the interest rates at traditional brick-and-mortar banks.
Because you have less expenses.
Well, it's less expensive, and also you've heard about all the banks saying that there aren't enough lending opportunities. The large banks are actually sitting on more deposits than they'd really care to have, so they're not looking to increase rates to attract more deposits. They're quite happy with the deposit base that they have. But the online banks do have capacity to lend more, which means they have the capacity to take more deposits. So we expect that the spread in rates between what an online bank can pay and what a brick-and-mortar bank can pay will actually increase as interest rates start to rise.
Well, let's talk about fees, because none of this is free, but it's not expensive. It's actually quite inexpensive compared to what you would pay at a regular bank or what you would get. So why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, we're all very fee-sensitive. What we focused on is how much incremental value can we deliver to our members. And right now, a typical member using Max could earn an extra $2,000 per year for every $250,000 they have on deposit with our system. Right now, our members are earning a weighted average interest rate of 0.87%. And that's dramatically higher than the national savings average, which is 0.11%, or many money market funds that are yielding 0.01 or 0.02%. So this is a pretty dramatic difference. And, as you know, at least this differential compounds over time. It's very important that you not miss out on these differences.
All right. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're talking with Gary Zimmerman. He is the brains behind a new, really interesting sort of tech/money play for anybody who has cash sitting in a bank account earning nothing. Now it can earn a little bit better than that. It's called MaxMyInterest.com. Stay tuned. We'll talk a little bit more with Gary coming up next on the Elyse Gling Show. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB.
News 95.5 and AM 750, WSB.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elyse Gling Show. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB. We're talking with Gary Zimmerman, and he is the brains behind a really interesting new concept called MaxMyInterest.com. And it's a place where if you have cash sitting in a bank account, it makes your cash work harder for you. And you earn more money because you're simply working with online accounts where in the background, Gary has invented this technology that moves your money around automatically in order to maximize the interest that you earn. So, Gary, just one more time, the thing that you mentioned about fees, you know, tell us again exactly what you charge and then how that compares with maybe some of the other places you might put your money.
Sure. So our system generates substantially more interest income for depositors than they typically might get in other forums. For a depositor with $250,000 of cash earning through our system, they could expect to earn an extra $2,000 per year. And, of course, the more money you have, the more you'll earn. We have one guy who currently has so much cash that the incremental interest that he would earn through Max will actually pay for his daughter to go to college each and every year.
That's nice. I wish that were me with all that cash sitting in an account.
Yeah, it's a nice problem to have. So the incremental interest earned through our system is about 80 basis points or 0.80%. And 0.8% is substantial when you compare it to what most bank accounts are paying. I think the national savings average is about 0.11%. Most money market funds are 0.01 or 0.02%, so effectively nothing. And those money markets, many of them are charging 0.16% or 0.17% in fees. So if you compare Max to a money market fund, for instance, we might be delivering, call it 0.88% in fees, then we charge a 0.08% fee, so the net return would be 0.80%, which is close to 1%.
Right, which is
much
really
better
nice.
Than any bank.
So, Gary, I know you have an opportunity for, it's really going to be open to the public, but it's brand new, and so you've kind of got this invitation-only thing. And so Gary set up a special code for all of my listeners, WSB Radio. If you go to maxmyinterest.com, and yes, we're putting it up on the blog, and you use the where it says invitation code, type in WSB Radio, one word, that will get you in if you want to try it out and see. I think it's terrific. And Gary, I really appreciate you inventing this for all of us so that we all can make our money work harder for us.
Terrific. Thank you very much, Elise. It's been a pleasure.
It's nice to have you on the show. Stay tuned. We've got Christine Benz, who's Director of Personal Finance at Morningstar, coming up next on News Talk WSB.
News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Kling Show, Rebuilding America One House at a Time, starting with yours on WSB. Gary corrected me after we got off the air to say that he was an investment banker, not a mutual fund manager. So I stand corrected. The person I have on now, though, is Christine Benz, and she's making a return appearance on the Elise Kling Show. She's Director of Personal Finance for Morningstar, and she has been that for since 2008, when the world fell. And we've been talking a lot about the housing crisis today. I assume this is going to continue with the other guests that we have lined up for today. But she, in her capacity as Director of Personal Finance, she writes and edits the monthly newsletter, Practical Finance. She also does a weekly column called Improving Your Finance on Morningstar.com and does a video where she interviews different people. I have been among them, and Wobbly will be again in the future. Christine, welcome back to the program.
Oh, Elise, it's always great to talk to you.
So as we were just getting ready to go on the air, I was asking you about how you're feeling about the stock market and the regular rules of rebalancing now that we're nearing record highs again. And what is that all about anyway? I mean, it doesn't feel like I know it's supposed to be the leading indicator, but the economy kind of hasn't caught up to where the stock market is.
That's right. And so the conventional rule of thumb is that you should periodically rebalance your portfolio. So the idea there is that you're going to scale back on whatever has performed well and plow the money into the asset class that hasn't performed as well. So right now, given that we've had this really 5-plus year run-up in the equity market, that would be a point when investors should be taking some profits in stocks. The problem is a lot of people are also worried about the bond market right now.
Right.
We've got yields that are seemingly as low as they can go on bonds, and so a lot of market prognosticators have suggested that the next big move in interest rates will be up. So
right.
Investors are feeling nervous about rebalancing and really wondering if the old rebalancing rules hold true.
Right. So it is really hard to invest in bonds right now when you feel like the only thing that will happen is you're just going to lose money when interest rates rise. So I get that, even though I know in my head that, you know, fund managers and bond traders already know that, so they're trying to plan for it. But still, I worry about bonds. And then, of course, the stock market, we really haven't had a good correction, have we?
We haven't. It was a little shaky in the earlier part of this year. We didn't get off to a great start, but I just recently looked at some of our mutual fund category averages, and nearly every category of domestic equity fund, except for a couple of the small cap categories, are in the black for the year to date. And in some cases, the numbers are pretty good. They're up 3-5%. So stocks are up. I think investors, if they're thinking about this rebalancing idea, the thing they want to come back to is, why do we own bonds? Why do we hold them in our portfolios? And the key thing to remember is they're not the return portion of your portfolio. The idea is that they're ballast for the higher return portions of your portfolio. So when your equity holdings go down, your bonds hold steady or maybe even go up a little bit. And I think that that relationship, even if bonds aren't particularly attractive, will hold up in an equity market sell-off. So I say if you haven't rebalanced your portfolio for a while, hold your nose, buy some bonds, maybe think about not taking a lot of risk with the bond portion of your portfolio. So keep your interest rate sensitivity fairly limited. Don't be taking a lot of credit quality risk. But do buy some bonds if you haven't done any rebalancing recently. Because if you haven't, if you've taken a hands-off approach to your portfolio, you've probably got more equities in your portfolio than your asset allocation plan would call for.
Right. So one of the things that we talk about in the show is index mutual funds, how cheap they are, how much better they do than virtually almost anything else. I mean, it's the old John Bogle thing over at Vanguard. And I think it still holds true. And so one of the things we talk about on the show is how you really, when it comes down to it, if you want to fix it and forget it kind of a portfolio, you could do three index mutual funds and pretty much be diversified enough. You may not get the top, top return, but you're going to do really well. And one would be kind of an overall global market fund, right? Stock fund, where you just basically are investing in all the companies that are out there.
Holding the whole market and holding them in the based on their market value. So
right.
I think that that's a great way to go. Or you could, and this would involve just one more fund, but you could do a separate U.S. total market fund as well as a foreign stock fund.
Right.
The advantage of doing that is that the expense ratio would actually be a little bit lower
mm-hmm.
than you'd be able to get by owning the global fund. But either way, it's a great low maintenance hands-off. Low cost way to go.
And I like actually doing it that way where you've got sort of a total stock market fund and then an international stock fund because truly they are supposed to move in lockstep. Mostly they do. 2008 being a notable exception. And then you have a global bond fund or some sort of total, like Vanguard has a really nice sort of kind of total bond fund kind
yes.
of index mutual fund. And it seems like if you just, those three alone, are pretty much enough if you balance it the right way where maybe it's, you know, 40% or 50% in the total stock market fund and then maybe a 10% in international and the rest in bonds, you're pretty well diversified along some of those lines.
I agree. There are a couple of things. If you own a total bond market index tracker, you'll miss out on a couple of categories. So they don't own junk bonds.
Right.
They don't own treasury inflation protected securities.
Tips, right?
So there are a couple of categories that you won't have in that total bond market index tracker. But certainly if you have that core equity exposure as well as a total bond market index fund, I would say you're 97% of the way there. The only thing you want to make sure that you have are those liquid reserves in your portfolio. So you want to make sure that you have cash to cover your emergency expenses, or if you're already retired, I would say you probably want 1 to 2 years worth of cash. But otherwise, I love that idea of a very minimalist, set it and forget it portfolio.
So the idea of cash is kind of interesting, which is what our last guest was talking about, is making your cash work a little bit harder for you. And so one of the things that I've been looking at lately is how much my cash is costing me, because
right.
I do have a lot of cash inside. We've got a lot of money in one of the big financial investment companies. It's kind of where everything has kind of landed over the years. You know, we had IRAs, and we moved them. We had 401ks, we moved them. We've got other stuff. And I kind of look at it, and I think to myself, that cash is costing. I didn't think about it much before I met Gary, but now I think about it, that
yes.
cash is costing me.
Yes, exactly. And cash is dead money for people right now. You're really lucky to earn half of a percentage point on your cash. So
well, you're really lucky if you get that.
Really lucky, right. So if you do have substantial sums in cash, it pays to shop around, think about where you've got that money, and make sure that you're at least earning a positive return. You're probably not out-earning the inflation rate, but at least you're in the black on a nominal basis. And consolidating the cash with one provider may help you get into some sort of better earning alternative. A lot of people have $10,000 here, $5,000 here. See if you can roll that up with a single provider, and you may be able to avail yourself of a higher yielding option. But
right.
generally, it's slim pickings for people who own cash right now.
So when you think about what's going on with, you know, and you guys have some very smart people over at Morningstar. When you think about what's going on with the world and the political stuff going on, right? And you've got Russia is kind of a hotspot and China's a hotspot, Latin America's a hotspot, and oh my gosh, it's time for the World Cup and Brazil's stadiums aren't even ready yet.
Right.
I mean, I feel like Brazil's just going to combust. That's kind of a hotspot. And so when you look at all these different kinds of hotspots, and in fact, you look at the United States, where the first quarter we were actually in a contraction mode,
mm-hmm.
surprise, surprise.
Very cold winter.
I'll say. Yeah, but yeah. I think it might be, you know, we've really been so sluggish and now, you know, negative 1%. What are the people inside Morningstar thinking about all this in terms of why we're still at the high for the stock market?
Well, I think that, you know, the U.S. economy is still a pretty steady engine despite all of these macroeconomic headwinds. And so what we always say, certainly what I always say, is pay attention to your own plan. I mean, it's impossible to tune out the big picture news about the economy because it's the world that we all live in. But pay attention to your own plan and try not to focus on those headlines so much, because at points when people are feeling really nervous, that's not necessarily a time when the stock market behaves badly. In fact, when you look at historical data, GDP growth is not a great predictor of stock market performance. The best predictor of good returns from the stock market is when stocks get cheap. So try to focus on what you can control and tune out the day-to-day news to the extent that you possibly can.
God, I wish I could tune out the day-to-day news. It is a little bit disturbing. There's no question about it. We're talking to Christine Benz, and she's the Director of Personal Finance for Morningstar, and she's been doing that since 2008, which is when the world fell apart. Morningstar does such an amazing job with all of the information. I think they do anyway. And there are a lot of tools that are available to the public outside the Chinese wall, so to speak. When we come back, will you run through a couple of those?
Absolutely. Thanks, Elise.
Perfect. Stand by, everybody. We'll be right back with Christine Benz of Morningstar on the Elise Klink Show, Rebuilding America One House at a Time, starting with yours on WSB.
News 95.5 and AM 750, WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Klink Show, Rebuilding America One House at a Time, starting with yours on WSB. So we've been talking with Christine Benz. She's Director of Personal Finance for Morningstar, the return guest to the show. And we're going to put up all of these great tips that she's kind of given us and is about to give you up on the thinklink.com blog. So go to thinklink.com, click on the blog, you'll see today's entry, and there'll be all kinds of information there for you. Christine, I know that Morningstar has tremendous tools available for free to many, many people. And there's a Chinese wall where you can pay to get even more cool stuff. But what are some of the things that my listeners can take advantage of on the Morningstar.com site?
Sure. Among the free tools I like the most are what's called our market fair value graph. And so that's on the markets tab of Morningstar.com. It's kind of an innocuous looking link. So you click on this market fair value graph, and what you see is the price to fair value for all of the companies that our stock analysts cover. So right now they've got a price to fair value of about 1.03. This is for all of the companies in their coverage universe. So that means that the market is trading just a touch over its fair value currently. But I frequently look at that just to kind of do a temperature check on where we are. Sometimes all of the stocks in their coverage universe get exceedingly cheap. So that happened back in 2008, obviously, again in early 2009. Sometimes they look pricey. And that's perhaps one of the signals that you might use when deciding to rebalance out of stocks. So I like to use that tool. I also like to drill in and see, well, even if the market in aggregate is looking a little bit overvalued, are there any pockets of value that we can find? So if we're putting new money to work, where would be the smart places to put it to work? So it's helpful from that standpoint as well.
Do you find that it's really accurate that your analysts, I mean, I know they know what they're talking about, but when you go back in time and look over some of their past, you know, predictions of fair value, that they've been accurate?
Well, you know, I think the big stress test was looking back to that financial crisis, and in their view, you know, you had a lot of market prognosticators at that time saying run for the hills, build cash. In their view, stocks got exceedingly cheap, and that was a strong buy signal. That was actually a pretty good time to start doing some buying. So I do think that even though the signals aren't universally accurate, that they have caught some of those big inflection points. So I find it helpful, and I would also note that they tend to err on the side of being conservative.
Which I just love, right?
Yeah, the idea is that, that people don't want to lose money.
Right.
And so we try to respect that and try to be conservative in terms of our fair value estimates. We typically will be a little bit cautious. So we've thought stocks were bouncing around roughly in line with fair value for a while now, and in fact they've gone up. So we will tend to get a little bit defensive, perhaps preemptively, but we think that that's an okay trade-off.
Christine Benz is Morningstar's Director of Personal Finance. Will you come back again?
I absolutely will. Thank you so much, Elise.
All right, you're welcome. Find her at online at Morningstar.com. I'm Elise Link. Stay tuned. We have another amazing hour for you coming up next on News Talk WSB.
When she was 18, her father gave her the advice she needed to follow her dreams and become a writer. The next day, he had a heart attack and died in her arms. She did become a writer and a business owner and then a wife and mother. Today, after 13 books, a million of them in print, she's an award-winning syndicated columnist, a radio and TV host, and the owner of two successful companies. And now, Elise is here to help you rebuild your life. Stay tuned. This is gonna be good. This is the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB. I want to wish a happy Father's Day to all the dads, uncles, brothers, cousins, sons who listen to the show every week. I hope you get a lot out of it. I know I do, and it's nice to have you around, so I hope it's a great rest of the day, and thank you for sharing with us. 404-872-0750. You can always find me online at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. That's the Twitter feed, or thinkglink.com. So my guest this morning, the first of two really interesting people, is a guy named Gary Zimmerman. And Gary was sitting in his office in Japan, where he was running a mutual fund, and thinking to himself he needed to move some cash around back in the States. And this was a number of years ago, and it was near the financial crisis, and it wasn't as easy as it sounds. You know, here, if you want to cross the street and get a quarter of a point of interest on your savings, you can do that. Not so easy when you live abroad. And so out of this came a really interesting website that I thought he should tell you about. And in the interest of full disclosure, I should tell you I met Gary because he asked our company to do some social media for him, which is how I met him. But his story is so interesting that I thought you should hear from him yourselves. So, Gary Zimmerman, welcome to the Elise Glink Show.
Thank you very much, Elise. It's nice to be here.
It's nice to have you. So I've given you kind of this tee-up that you were sitting in Japan trying to figure out how to move money around, but there's so much more to that story. The website is called MaxMyInterest.com. So why don't we start there? What is Max all about?
Sure. Well, Max is a new online service that helps investors automatically maximize the interest they earn on their cash. I think many of us have been frustrated by how low interest rates have been for so long, and we thought it was time to finally bring a little bit of transparency and automation to cash, really as an asset class. And many people don't think of it that way, but many people are sitting on larger balances of cash because they've made a very purposeful decision to keep it as cash.
So you've got cash in this account and sitting there. I've got savings. Everybody's got savings who listens to this show because, you know, I think that's so important. And trying to maximize it when the banks pay virtually nothing. I mean, I think you might be even losing money just with what a regular bank would pay. What your innovation was to basically go to online banks, right?
That's right. And online banks have been around for about a decade, but only a small subset of the population either knows about them or has used them. What was interesting to me about online banks is that they have a fundamentally different business model. And that business model doesn't require them to have brick-and-mortar branches, and as a result, their operating costs are dramatically lower than those of a traditional brick-and-mortar bank. And what they've been able to do is pass on a portion of those savings to depositors in the form of higher rates.
So we, on the show, we've talked often about ING Direct, which was an online bank. Discover has an online bank called Discover Bank. These are the kinds of banks you're talking about, right?
Yeah, that's right. ING Direct was one of the leading online banks. They were acquired by Capital One, which many people think of as a credit card company, and that was renamed Capital One 360. And they're one of the banks that we've included in our network, as well as several other leading brands in financial services today. So Barclays, American Express, GE Capital, and Ally Bank are also in our system.
These are all FDIC-insured banks. And that's really part of what you're doing here, is you're helping people who would need to think about FDIC limits, right, of $250,000 per account, so that it would have the full range of insurance possible. You're helping them maximize and increase the safety of their cash as well, right?
That's right, and different people are using our system for different purposes. Some of our members, we call our customers members, some of our members have many multiples of the FDIC insurance limit in cash, and what they're looking for primarily is a system to help them manage cash across multiple banks so that they can help ensure that all of that cash stays safe. Other members are interested in earning as much as possible on their cash, and so they're interested in the fact that our system presents a dynamic cash reallocation model so that as interest rates change, our system helps those funds flow from bank accounts with lower rates to bank accounts with higher rates. And some of our members like both of those features, and we think that that delivers a lot of value for them.
So you're sitting in your apartment in Japan, and you've just sold a place in the United States. You've got some cash, and you're living abroad, so you can't buy another house with it. And what happened after you were sort of in that situation, trying to move money around physically and finding it was just really difficult? When did you get this idea for MaxMyInterest.com?
Well, I think we all remember the financial crisis, perhaps all too painfully. and I hit this moment, this revelation that all of my cash that was above the FDIC limit at my bank was now exposed. And that if the bank didn't survive, all of that cash would disappear. And I think the reason most of us hold on to cash is because we want it to be that safe asset class, that safe haven. So it's the last thing that we want to have at risk. And so, as you mentioned, I couldn't walk around the corner and open up new bank accounts at brick and mortar branches because I was living 7,000 miles away. And so I went online and I studied the online banks and FDIC insurance and got comfortable. And then spent the day opening actually a very large number of these online accounts. They only take about 10 or 15 minutes to open each, but I opened many of them. So that was how it started. But then as time passed, I noticed that the interest rates at these banks were changing. And at the time, it was a declining interest rate environment, so one bank would cut its rate and then another would cut its rate further. And my view was that all of these online bank accounts, since they were FDIC insured, were offering something very similar. And I thought that my money ought to be placed in the accounts that were offering the highest interest rate. That seems simple enough.
Yeah, well, I would want my money to earn more for me. We talk on the show a lot about making your money work as hard as it can for you, because you're already out there working as hard as you can to earn it to begin
That's right.
with. So just sitting around letting it languish doesn't seem to be the smartest thing in the book.
That's right. So I started a very manual process of monitoring interest rates, and I wasn't perfectly disciplined about it. We're all busy, and we all have other things to do. But from time to time, I would log into these accounts and check the rates and transfer the funds from one of my accounts to another one of my accounts. And I did this for about 3.5 years before I finally got tired of doing it. But I couldn't stop doing it because I knew that this opportunity to earn more on that cash existed. And so I sat down to see whether it might be possible to automate this whole process so that the cash could continue working hard for me without me having to spend my Sundays.
Sundays for you in Japan would, of course, be Monday morning for the United States. As we know, during the financial crisis, I would start many a show on Sunday morning saying, well, guess what happened? You know, what's happened between the time that the U.S. stock market closed and before Asia opens? And here we are. All right. So you came up with this idea. You've built the technology using a Chicago-based company. I know that you've partnered with them, which is how we got introduced. And now you've got this whole thing kind of working in the background, right? The technology just sort of works for you, and it automatically moves the money around between these accounts you've already set up. And then if you need money, what happens? How does it get to your checking account?
Well, the way that online banks work is that when you set them up, you link them to your checking account, and that's done via a secure link using what they call trial deposits. It's through a network called ACH, which some people call eCheck, and it's basically an electronic linkage between your online account and your checking account. And all of the transfers that occur through Max occur along those linkages, so they're highly secure. The way that Max works is when it finds that money needs to move from one place to another, it simply asks your banks on your behalf to move funds from one of your accounts to another account. And with Max, you initially tell the system how much you'd like to keep in checking, and as Max does its monthly optimization calculations, it makes sure that that amount of money is left in checking. So if you've dipped below your desired target balance, it will pull funds from savings back to your checking account to top it up. If you find yourself with more in checking than you intended to have, it will sweep it away to the higher yielding savings accounts.
So it's just kind of working in the background, making your money work harder for you.
That's exactly right. And so Max involves a one-time setup, and then after that it really runs automatically. And often I'll call our members just to ask them how they're doing and how they're enjoying Max, and often what I'll hear is Gary, I frankly haven't thought about it in months, which is exactly what I like to hear, because the whole point is that we all have better things to do with our time, and so you can set this up once and then it's sort of set it and forget it.
So what's nice about this is when you look at the banks, when they raise their interest rates, which I know you think, because we had this conversation offline, you think is going to happen, that interest rates are going to go up. And we've been hearing sort of the same thing from economists all year, although it hasn't happened yet. You think that these interest rates are going to rise, and then inside Max, the interest rates in all the accounts sort of rise or fall, whatever the bank is going to do, and you automatically move the money around to maximize it. So if interest rates go up, you automatically get that in for all of your cash, right?
That's right. And in fact, the online banks that we've spoken to agree with our view that the interest rates at online banks will likely rise faster than the interest rates at traditional brick and mortar banks.
Because you have less expenses.
Well, it's less expensive. And also, you've heard about all the banks saying that there aren't enough lending opportunities. The large banks are actually sitting on more deposits than they'd really care to have. So they're not looking to increase rates to attract more deposits. They're quite happy with the deposit base that they have. But the online banks do have capacity to lend more, which means they have the capacity to take more deposits. So we expect that the spread in rates between what an online bank can pay and what a brick-and-mortar bank can pay will actually increase as interest rates start to rise.
Well, let's talk about fees, because none of this is free, but it's not expensive. It's actually quite inexpensive compared to what you would pay at a regular bank or what you would get. So why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, we're all very fee sensitive. What we focused on is how much incremental value can we deliver to our members. And right now, a typical member using Max could earn an extra $2,000 per year for every $250,000 they have on deposit with our system. Right now, our members are earning a weighted average interest rate of 0.87%. And that's dramatically higher than the national savings average, which is 0.11%, or many money market funds that are yielding 0.01 or 0.02%. So this is a pretty dramatic difference. And, as you know, at least this differential compounds over time. It's very important that you not miss out on these differences.
All right. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're talking with Gary Zimmerman. He is the brains behind a new, really interesting sort of tech/money play for anybody who has cash sitting in a bank account earning nothing. Now it can earn a little bit better than that. It's called MaxMyInterest.com. Stay tuned. We'll talk a little bit more with Gary coming up next on the Elyse Gling Show. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB.
News 95.5 and AM 750, WSB.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elyse Gling Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB. We're talking with Gary Zimmerman, and he is the brains behind a really interesting new concept called MaxMyInterest.com. And it's a place where if you have cash sitting in a bank account, it makes your cash work harder for you. And you earn more money because you're simply working with online accounts where in the background, Gary has invented this technology that moves your money around automatically in order to maximize the interest that you earn. So, Gary, just one more time, the thing that you mentioned about fees, you know, tell us again exactly what you charge and then how that compares with maybe some of the other places you might put your money.
Sure. So our system generates substantially more interest income for depositors than they typically might get in other forums. For a depositor with $250,000 of cash running through our system, they could expect to earn an extra $2,000 per year. And, of course, the more money you have, the more you'll earn. We have one guy who currently has so much cash that the incremental interest that he would earn through Max will actually pay for his daughter to go to college each and every year.
That's nice. I wish that were me with all that cash sitting in an account.
It's a nice problem to have. So the incremental interest earned through our system is about 80 basis points or 0.80%. And 0.8% is substantial when you compare it to what most bank accounts are paying. I think the national savings average is about 0.11%. Most money market funds are 0.01 or 0.02%, so effectively nothing. And those money markets, many of them are charging 0.16% or 0.17% in fees. So if you compare Max to a money market fund, for instance, we might be delivering, call it 0.88% in fees, then we charge a 0.08% fee, so the net return would be 0.80%, which is close to 1%.
Right, which is
much
really
better
nice.
Than any bank.
So, Gary, I know you have an opportunity for, it's really going to be open to the public, but it's brand new, and so you've kind of got this invitation-only thing. And so Gary set up a special code for all of my listeners, WSB Radio. If you go to maxmyinterest.com, and yes, we're putting it up on the blog, and you use the where it says invitation code, type in WSB Radio, one word, that will get you in if you want to try it out and see. I think it's terrific. And Gary, I really appreciate you inventing this for all of us so that we all can make our money work harder for us.
Terrific. Thank you very much, Elise. It's been a pleasure.
It's nice to have you on the show. Stay tuned. We've got Christine Benz, who's Director of Personal Finance at Morningstar, coming up next on News Talk WSB.
News 95.5 and AM 750, WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Kling Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB. Gary corrected me after we got off the air to say that he was an investment banker, not a mutual fund manager. So I stand corrected. The person I have on now, though, is Christine Benz, and she's making a return appearance on the Elise Kling Show. She's Director of Personal Finance for Morningstar, and she has been that since 2008 when the world fell. And we've been talking a lot about the housing crisis today. I assume this is going to continue with the other guests that we have lined up for today. But she, in her capacity as Director of Personal Finance, she writes and edits the monthly newsletter, Practical Finance. She also does a weekly column called Improving Your Finance on Morningstar.com and does a video where she interviews different people. I have been among them, and Wobbly will be again in the future. Christine, welcome back to the program.
Oh, Elise, it's always great to talk to you.
So as we were just getting ready to go on the air, I was asking you about how you're feeling about the stock market and the regular rules of rebalancing now that we're nearing record highs again. And what is that all about anyway? I mean, it doesn't feel like I know it's supposed to be the leading indicator, but the economy kind of hasn't caught up to where the stock market is.
That's right. And so the conventional rule of thumb is that you should periodically rebalance your portfolio. So the idea there is that you're going to scale back on whatever has performed well and plow the money into the asset class that hasn't performed as well. So right now, given that we've had this really 5-plus year run-up in the equity market, that would be a point when investors should be taking some profits in stocks. The problem is a lot of people are also worried about the bond market right now.
Right.
We've got yields that are seemingly as low as they can go on bonds, and so a lot of market prognosticators have suggested that the next big move in interest rates will be up. So
right.
Investors are feeling nervous about rebalancing and really wondering if the old rebalancing rules hold true.
Right. So it is really hard to invest in bonds right now when you feel like the only thing that will happen is you're just going to lose money when interest rates rise. So I get that. Even though I know in my head that, you know, fund managers and bond traders already know that, so they're trying to plan for it. But still, I worry about bonds. And then, of course, the stock market, we really haven't had a good correction, have we?
We haven't. It was a little shaky in the earlier part of this year. We didn't get off to a great start, but I just recently looked at some of our fund, mutual fund category averages, and nearly every category of domestic equity fund, except for a couple of the small cap categories, are in the black for the year to date. And in some cases, the numbers are pretty good. They're up 3%, 4%, 5%. So stocks are up. I think investors, if they're thinking about this rebalancing idea, the thing they want to come back to is, why do we own bonds? Why do we hold them in our portfolios? And the key thing to remember is they're not the return portion of your portfolio. The idea is that they're ballast for the higher return portions of your portfolio. So when your equity holdings go down, your bonds hold steady or maybe even go up a little bit. And I think that that relationship, even if bonds aren't particularly attractive, will hold up in an equity market sell-off. So I say, if you haven't rebalanced your portfolio for a while, hold your nose, buy some bonds, maybe think about not taking a lot of risk with the bond portion of your portfolio, so keep your interest rate sensitivity fairly limited, don't be taking a lot of credit quality risk, but do buy some bonds if you haven't done any rebalancing recently, because if you've taken a hands-off approach to your portfolio, you've probably got more equities in your portfolio than your asset allocation plan would call for.
Right. So one of the things that we talk about in the show is index mutual funds, how cheap they are, how much better they do than virtually almost anything else. I mean, it's the old John Bogle thing over at Vanguard. And I think it still holds true. And so one of the things we talk about on the show is how you really, when it comes down to it, if you want to fix it and forget it kind of a portfolio, you could do three index mutual funds and pretty much be diversified enough. You may not get the top, top return, but you're going to do really well. And one would be kind of an overall global market fund, right? Stock fund, where you just basically are investing in all the companies that are out there.
Holding the whole market and holding them in the based on their market value. So
right.
I think that that's a great way to go. Or you could, and this would involve just one more fund, but you could do a separate U.S. total market fund as well as a foreign stock fund.
Right.
The advantage of doing that is that the expense ratio would actually be a little bit lower
mm-hmm.
than you'd be able to get by owning the global fund. But either way is a great low-maintenance, hands-off, low-cost way to go.
And I like actually doing it that way, where you've got sort of a total stock market fund and then an international stock fund, because truly they are supposed to move in lockstep. Mostly they do, 2008 being a notable exception. And then you have a global bond fund or some sort of total, like Vanguard has a really nice sort of kind of total bond fund, kind
yes.
of index mutual fund. And it seems like if you just, those three alone are pretty much enough if you balance it the right way, where maybe it's, you know, 40% or 50% in the total stock market fund and then maybe a 10% in international and the rest in bonds, you're pretty well diversified along some of those lines.
I agree. There are a couple of things. If you own a total bond market index tracker, you'll miss out on a couple of categories. So they don't own junk bonds.
Right.
They don't own treasury inflation-protected securities.
Tips, right?
So there are a couple of categories that you won't have in that total bond market index tracker. But certainly if you have that core equity exposure as well as a total bond market index fund, I would say you're 97% of the way there. The only thing you want to make sure that you have are those liquid reserves in your portfolio. So you want to make sure that you have cash to cover your emergency expenses, or if you're already retired, I would say you probably want 1 to 2 years worth of cash. But otherwise, I love that idea of a very minimalist set it and forget it portfolio.
So the idea of cash is kind of interesting, which is what our last guest was talking about, is making your cash work a little bit harder for you. And so one of the things that I've been looking at lately is how much my cash is costing me, because
right.
I do have a lot of cash inside. We've got a lot of money in one of the big financial investment companies. It's kind of where everything has kind of landed over the years. You know, we had IRAs, and we moved them. We had 401ks, we moved them. We've got other stuff. And I kind of look at it, and I think to myself, that cash is costing. I didn't think about it much before I met Gary, but now I think about that
yes.
cash is costing me.
Yes, exactly. And cash is dead money for people right now. You're really lucky to earn half of a percentage point on your cash. So
you're really lucky if you get that.
Really lucky, right. So if you do have substantial sums in cash, it pays to shop around, think about where you've got that money, and make sure that you're at least earning a positive return. You're probably not out-earning the inflation rate, but at least you're in the black on a nominal basis. And consolidating the cash with one provider may help you get into some sort of better earning alternative. A lot of people have $10,000 here, $5,000 here. See if you can roll that up with a single provider, and you may be able to avail yourself of a higher yielding option. But generally, it's slim pickings for people who own cash right now.
So when you think about what's going on with, you know, and you guys have some very smart people over at Morningstar, when you think about what's going on with the world and the political stuff going on, right? You've got Russia is kind of a hot spot, and China's a hot spot, Latin America's a hot spot, and oh my gosh, it's time for the World Cup, and Brazil's stadiums aren't even ready yet.
Right.
I mean, I feel like Brazil's just going to combust. That's kind of a hot spot. And so when you look at all these different kinds of hot spots, and in fact, you look at the fact, look at the United States, where the first quarter we were actually in a contraction mode.
Mm-hmm.
Surprise, surprise.
Very cold winter.
I'll say, yeah, but yeah. I think it might be, you know, we've really been so sluggish, and now, you know, negative 1%. What are the people inside Morningstar thinking about all this in terms of why we're still at the high for the stock market?
Well, I think that, you know, the U.S. economy is still a pretty steady engine despite all of these macroeconomic headwinds. And so what we always say, certainly what I always say, is pay attention to your own plan. I mean, it's impossible to tune out the big picture news about the economy because it's the world that we all live in. But pay attention to your own plan and try not to focus on those headlines so much, because at points when people are feeling really nervous, that's not necessarily a time when the stock market behaves badly. In fact, when you look at historical data, GDP growth is not a great predictor of stock market performance. The best predictor of good returns from the stock market is when stocks get cheap. So try to focus on what you can control and tune out the day-to-day news to the extent that you possibly can.
God, I wish I could tune out the day-to-day news. It is a little bit disturbing. There's no question about it. We're talking to Christine Benz, and she's the Director of Personal Finance for Morningstar, and she's been doing that since 2008, which is when the world fell apart. Morningstar does such an amazing job with all of the information. I think they do anyway. And there are a lot of tools that are available to the public outside the Chinese wall, so to speak. When we come back, will you run through a couple of those?
Absolutely. Thanks, Elise.
Perfect. Stand by, everybody. We'll be right back with Christine Benz of Morningstar on the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB.
News 95.5 and AM 750, WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB. So we've been talking with Christine Benz. She's Director of Personal Finance for Morningstar, the return guest to the show. And we're going to put up all of these great tips that she's kind of given us and is about to give you up on the thinklink.com blog. So go to thinklink.com, click on the blog, you'll see today's entry, and there'll be all kinds of information there for you. Christine, I know that Morningstar has tremendous tools available for free to many, many people. And there's a Chinese wall where you can pay to get even more cool stuff. But what are some of the things that my listeners can take advantage of on the Morningstar.com site?
Sure. Among the free tools I like the most are what's called our market fair value graph. And so that's on the markets tab of Morningstar.com. It's kind of an innocuous looking link. So you click on this market fair value graph, and what you see is the price to fair value for all of the companies that our stock analysts cover. So right now they've got a price to fair value of about 1.03. This is for all of the companies in their coverage universe. So that means that the market is trading just a touch over its fair value currently. But I frequently look at that just to kind of do a temperature check on where we are. Sometimes all of the stocks in their coverage universe get exceedingly cheap. So that happened back in 2008, obviously, again in early 2009. Sometimes they look pricey, and that's perhaps one of the signals that you might use when deciding to rebalance out of stocks. So I like to use that tool. I also like to drill in and see, well, even if the market in aggregate is looking a little bit overvalued, are there any pockets of value that we can find? So if we're putting new money to work, where would be the smart places to put it to work? So it's helpful from that standpoint as well.
Do you find that it's really accurate that your analysts, I mean, I know they know what they're talking about, but when you go back in time and look over some of their past, you know, predictions of fair value, that they've been accurate?
Well, you know, I think the big stress test was looking back to that financial crisis, and in their view, you know, you had a lot of market prognosticators at that time saying run for the hills, build cash. In their view, stocks got exceedingly cheap, and that was a strong buy signal. That was actually a pretty good time to start doing some buying. So I do think that even though the signals aren't universally accurate, that they have caught some of those big inflection points. So I find it helpful. And I would also note that they tend to err on the side of being conservative.
Which
so,
I just love, right?
Yeah, the idea is that, people don't want to lose money.
Right.
And so we try to respect that and try to be conservative in terms of our fair value estimates. We typically will be a little bit cautious. So we've thought stocks were bouncing around roughly in line with fair value for a while now, and in fact they've gone up. So we will tend to get a little bit defensive, perhaps preemptively, but we think that that's an okay trade-off.
Christine Benz is Morningstar's Director of Personal Finance. Will you come back again?
I absolutely will. Thank you so much, Elise.
All right. You're welcome. Find her at online at Morningstar.